We want to build a community and share other women's stories. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tea with TE podcast. This is the She Who Leads series, and today we've got Caroline Walker on the show. Caroline, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. And Caroline is the Chief People Officer at Trailstone. And we were just talking a little bit about this, weren't we, Caroline? So I'd love for you to introduce yourself, but also a little bit about background and any info on Trailstone as well would be helpful.
Of course. Well, as Terry said, I'm Caroline. Starting firstly with a little bit about me as a person. I'm 46 years old. I'm from Scotland. I'm incredibly proud of my Scottish heritage. I'm a mum to four children. I'm actually a single parent post the breakdown of my marriage back after the birth of my fourth child back in 2016. So I've got two girls and two boys. My girls are Annie and Isla, 15 and 11 respectively, massively into Taylor Swift. So we had the privilege of going to watch her up at Murrayfield in Edinburgh this weekend, which was awesome. I wasn't a Swiftie before, but I definitely am now. And then I've got my younger two, William and Spencer. So my two boys, 11 and 7, and they're football crazy. So I'm hoping soon they are going to make a career out of it, and then I can retire and spend my days in retirement in the sun somewhere. So what else can I tell you? Avid exerciser. I exercise a lot for my mental health, and in any spare time when I'm not working or being taxi driver to the four kids, I love to read. So I read anything I can get my hands on. So be that sort of self-help, psychology, or the latest rubbishy romance novel that's by my bed at the moment. So career-wise, I did a master's in psychology at Edinburgh, so I did manage to get back up to Scotland. I left when I was young, but I'm, as I say, very patriotic, so I got to do my master's at Edinburgh psychology. So that gives you, I guess, insight into the fact that I've always been interested in human behaviour and what motivates people. And when I left uni, I did a stint with the Ministry of Defence looking at the early identification and risk factors that attribute to post-traumatic stress disorder. And that was an amazing experience. I think I lasted about 2.5-3 years there. But cumulatively, it was actually quite a stressful experience for me too. And I called up a girlfriend one summer who was working in the city as a recruiter. And I was like, find me a job. I don't care what it is. I just need to do something for the summer. And that happened to be as an HR administrator in a sort of tech consultancy. And I think within about 18 months after that, I was at JP Morgan. And then I went on to have a 16-year career at JP in various HR jobs. Which was incredible because JP, 270,000 people, you know, multiple businesses. So in effect, it felt like I'd worked at five, six, seven different organizations over that period. Really worked with super smart people, great, great jobs, different, loads of different experiences. And then I got to pandemic time and I thought, okay, you know, next big roles for me. Hard to see where that was going in Europe, really, and probably would have been a move to the US. And I was, as I say, a single parent with four children, and it wasn't the time to move, you know, across the globe. So started to look for my next move, and I came across Trailstone, and absolutely loved the management team that interviewed me here, and I still do to this day. Trailstone is a commodities trading shop, effectively very focused on power trading, but also with a real slant on renewable energy and managing the energy transition. So we've got a big hub in Berlin that's specifically focused on that. So what was really attractive here was it was a real grassroots, right? Very entrepreneurial. There hadn't been a lot of structure on the HR side. So moving from a massive corporate where everything was really done to coming into somewhere where I got to really shape the agenda and build things from a grassroots perspective. So I've been doing that over the last 20 months. And actually this weekend, we just signed a deal where we've just been acquired by Engelhardt Commodities Trading Partners, who are owned by BTG Pactual, the largest investment bank in LATAM. So super excited as to what that means for us, because like, it gives us the opportunity of permanent capital,
Yeah.
which can really accelerate our business. So really exciting times here.
Amazing, very exciting, and a great opportunity to be part of that as well, to take them through that as the next
Yeah, I've
thing
learned.
on kind of your story.
Yeah, it's something I haven't done before, really, and I learned an awful lot through it. It's a really interesting
So
time.
yeah, and more learning to come, I imagine, for the next few years. Also very jealous that you got to go and see Taylor Swift on the
Yeah,
weekend. Did
the
not know that you were going there.
show.
I wish you'd taken me with
It's an experience.
you. Yeah, I can imagine. I imagine it was great. As you know, this podcast is really aimed at the female lens, and I know you have a very significant background in focusing on diversity, but also kind of just generally, as you just talked about there within the people space. I know that you've covered many roles throughout your career, and obviously diversity has kind of been a part of that throughout. So the purpose of today is to obviously just kind of pull out and share anything with our community, but also to get to know you. And you've had such a fantastic career, Caroline. So we'd love to just kind of dive into that a little bit more. We tend to have a bit of a platform here to be able to share learnings. And so would love to hear from you in terms of what your biggest learning experiences have been in your career to date.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent question. And actually, as I was thinking about it, truly, I think some of the most meaningful learning experiences for me were around my relationships with various managers over the years. And the one that I recall the most, really quite early on in my career at JP Morgan, was when I was being managed by an incredibly abrasive individual, and I found myself really struggling in the job. And it was a miserable period actually for quite a few months. And I realized that I could either give up and leave, as it were,
Yeah.
or I could sort of challenge the situation. And I chose to challenge the situation and got to a head. And I remember it was my birthday, and I was meant to be going out to meet my friends. And I thought, I'm so miserable, I don't want to go, but I need to actually
Oh,
speak to her.
no.
And I went to see her, and I really articulated. I said, "Look, the way you're treating me," because she would try to call me out in front of clients as if to say, "Oh," even though it wasn't my mistake, she'd say, "Oh, Caroline's not here," and she'd sent me to the wrong room, so I was late for a meeting, which made me look inefficient. And you know, in investment banking, the client, it's you know, people don't tolerate mistakes, as it were, and anything that was actually maybe driven by her was put onto me, and just her whole style was incredibly abrasive and toxic. So I ended up sort of breaking down a little bit with her and saying, "This is how you're making me feel. I actually don't want to work with you anymore or support you." And interestingly, she burst into tears, and it was clearer the stress that she was under. And it was a huge breakthrough moment for us, because then I could say, "Okay, look, I'm here to help you. I want to support you. It's hugely stressful. We've got a lot to get done, but I can't be treated like this." And in a weird way, I think she respected me, but I also had tremendous insight into the stress that she was dealing with. But all of that aside, yes, we ended up going on to have a fabulous working relationship, but it really taught me how I didn't want to lead people. I don't want anyone feeling like that works around me or within my team. So for me, it was like, you can always be kind. And I think that's super important. And I think leading with kindness, is key. And I think it's important for your team to want to work with you, to like you. It carries you a long way. And I think she inadvertently taught me that. She was technically brilliant, and I learned a lot from her technically. But she kind of changed that. And then on the flip side of that, I've had, you know, the last manager I had, or the second last manager I had before I left JP, I will always have such tremendous professional respect for her, because she did exactly the opposite. She totally empowered me.
Amazing.
When I was pregnant with my last child, my fourth child, I was 6 months pregnant, and she gave me the biggest job of my career, knowing I was about to go out on maternity leave. So that job actually got me to managing director at JP, and she took a risk,
Amazing.
and she went to the clients and she said, "This should be Caroline's job. She's qualified for this job. She's 6 months pregnant. we will cover it for you. We will make sure you've got the support, and she will be back in sort of 6 months to take over this job. So she was powerful enough to push that in front of a client, and it wasn't even a decision. It was, this is what's going to happen
Yeah.
because she's the right person to do this job, and this is what I'm doing in my team. So she was forceful and totally, and as a result, I would have done, we worked brilliantly together and we could
Yeah.
achieve a lot because I felt empowered, trusted, at a time where I think women can feel pretty vulnerable. Well, you're sat there right now.
Yes.
It was somebody took a risk in that sort of environment
Amazing.
on me and told the clients this is what was going to happen. And
Yeah. It
that
also,
inspiration.
yeah, and then it makes you feel like you could go on to do that with your own team, right? I think the more we see that, especially in a bank, and I think, and I know I shouldn't say especially in a bank, but I do think sometimes the client comes first, and actually, typically in that environment, they probably wouldn't have gone for you if you hadn't had that type of leadership behind you, because it takes someone strong enough to say, Carol, that's Caroline's role.
That's it. That's it. She was, and again, what I loved about her is she didn't think twice about it. It was the right thing to do. And I learned to do that. If it's the right thing, push for it. You know what I mean? You don't sort of get talked down.
Yeah, and it's
You
leading by
led that
example, isn't it?
authority.
It's learning.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And she led with that authority, and it wasn't even questioned, and it was just done.
Yeah. It's incredible the difference that impact of like a leader, your boss, who sometimes those decisions are so like quick to be made, and they go, okay, this is your report. Like when a leader is put into place and actually they've never been a leader before, and then obviously they're in this position where they've got people. It probably, maybe that's how your first boss was feeling with the stress, and she didn't know how to do it. But it just shows the difference, actually, how
Yeah.
good leadership makes such an impact.
Yeah. And I've definitely
Any
learned from
other learnings? Any other learnings? Or I know the next question is similar, but not exactly the same. And I think this is more achievement focused. But what have been some of the biggest achievements in your career?
I guess one of the tick box ones that I am proud of in retrospect. It's something that I think I didn't massively celebrate at the time, but I think when I did make that managing director at JP, that's a big deal in that sort of a bank, in that, it's like a 2-day review committee and you have to have six reviewers and an independent reviewer and six sponsors,
Oh,
and
wow.
it's like it's a huge deal to get there. And literally you're giving up a kidney, and like the amount of work you have to do in the jobs and everything. So actually to get that was probably, on the career ladder, it was a super achievement. And I guess it's something in hindsight I'm more proud of, and at the time you just sort of are doing it, but
Oh, you're
that's one of,
juggling lots of things at the
yeah,
time, I
for sure. So yes, career-wise, that was an achievement. I think on the more personal day-to-day level of satisfaction, I would say from the role, and what I would class as a personal achievement, has been where I've been able to, what I would say, make progress with quite difficult agendas. So one of my roles was I led the DEI and agenda for the EMEA businesses. Or for the whole EMEA region for JP, and then more specifically for the technology business at JP Morgan. So that was sort of a combined role. I remember, it was in the wake of the devastating murder of George Floyd, and I had clients, particularly in London, saying to me, well, this isn't really about us happening in the US, right? There's not a lot that this is not really impacting us here, or so there's nothing for me really to do. And being able to help them, I think, understand the impact of how that felt in the very office that they were working in, and then seeing their reaction to that, their little aha moment of gone, I said, have you gone and spoken to any of the black traders you've got on the trading floor? See how well, I speak to them every day. And I was like, well, have you asked them how they're feeling about this? And oh, okay. And then to come back and say to me, right, Caroline, what do we need to do here? Because this is hurting our people here. And just for people to have that aha moment, and to
Mm.
then see some of those clients become some of the biggest allies of potentially the Advancing Black Pathways, and mentoring some of the students that we were bringing in from some of the more socioeconomically deprived parts of London, for example, and
Yeah.
just making it part of their day-to-day work for people that just was like, well, what? I treat everyone the same, there's no
How do we
problem.
yeah.
But actually meaningfully progress an agenda and to be part
Yeah.
of that, there, that for
Amazing.
me is just a sort of tremendous personal achievement, really.
Yeah, amazing. And it's funny the mindset shift I think that you can have and help people to have that actually they don't even realize that they need to have. But it sounds as though you actually took people on a journey, which is that's the hardest part of that, especially when it's around diversity. It's like, oh no, I don't, it doesn't count for me. And it's like, it probably does. So maybe let's have a bit of a conversation about it. So that's great. And I'm glad that you were able to have an impact, obviously, in
Yeah, they're the ones
difficult
that feel really good.
circumstances.
They're the achievements that actually feel really good.
Yeah, and they come, like you say, come back with the aha moments, and you're like, okay, I do know what I'm talking about. I'm glad that you have listened to me. Any others in there before I move on to the next? I'm sure there's
Probably,
many.
yeah, but probably will come out in different contexts
Okay.
throughout our conversation, I would have
Yeah.
thought.
Yeah. So having a think then, obviously we touched upon it there, and obviously you kind of grew up with JP Morgan, so to speak. So being a woman in finance and being an HR leader in finance and actually being in an organization that probably didn't think about their Black community or their Black trading community, like that must have had an impact on you. And you must have come across some situations during your tenure, your 16 years. So what challenges did you face and how did you overcome those, particularly kind of coming at it from a female in a finance lens?
It was never overt, as I would say. I don't think there was ever any intentional sort of discrimination or sexism, and or it certainly was unconscious, is what I would say. But the ways that I would say it came across to me, or okay, well, two things. Firstly, I would say there were multiple situations I've been in where I have been the only female, be that at a management team, at 2-day offsites, for example, where you're the only woman at a dinner. And it's obvious that when they come in to sit at the dinner, they don't want to sit next to you. The men in the room genuinely don't want to sit next to you because they're worried that their chat won't resonate with you, and they want to talk boys' stuff with the boys. And you can see it. You can kind of say, oh, you can literally see who has picked the short straw that ends up having to sit next to Caroline. Like you can kind of see that dread in the face. And then it's small talk, small talk, small talk. And eventually they realize I can actually have a conversation, and we end up probably having quite a laugh. But it takes a little bit of time to sort of get there. So that has always been, oh, here we go. I've always felt,
Who's
ooh,
going to come
gotta
and sit
mind
next to me?
that. Yeah. And then others have been, situations where it's like, again, similar. We've all been for a dinner after a long day of meeting on some sort of session. And it's like, oh, X ball game's on. We're all going to the bar. We'll see you tomorrow, Caroline. Just the assumption that you're. So,
Don't want
as
to
I
go.
say, and then others have been more kind-hearted, and in their own heads, they've sort of suggested, oh, you won't want to come to that because you will have to get back for the kids or whatever. So we'll try and do it at lunchtime. So just men making assumptions around how I'll manage my life because I happen to have children or single, whatever it is, whatever label they've put on their head, that which they'd never do to a male. They just it would just never even be a sort of factor. So that's where I felt some of those sort of experiences more personally. As well as, in meetings where you're saying something and people will just outwardly talk over you. Quite frankly, you're having a conversation, they'll just start talking over you. So there's some of the incidents, and they genuinely, again, you don't really see men talking over other men as much as they'll quite quickly interrupt, or just again subtle things like, oh, you're the one that sort of asked to make sure that is anyone sent for the tea, or well, Caroline better go and check that that's come in, those sort of things. No, that sort of stuff didn't really happen that often.
It's just the stereotype, isn't it? And you just like it's just a shame that that is. It's hard, I understand it's hard to like, and you can't really unpick it. And like you say, it's unconscious. I think people do it and then they probably reflect on it and go, oh gosh, I probably shouldn't have sent Caroline to do the tea run.
But there is, and I think the second part of your question is how do you
How
navigate
do we
that?
change it?
And my thing is call it out, constantly call it out, and I'll make a joke
Would
now.
you? Yeah, I think you would, right? I imagine you would.
Now I'm like, if I'm at the dinner now, it'll be like, oh, you got the short straw, you're next to me, and like I'll make a laugh of it. And then very quickly, like you talk with anybody, you find the common ground. And there will be, regardless of, whether you're from the moon or not, it doesn't matter, like what male, female, whatever, there's everybody common ground. You just need to work out where it is, and then you can engage in the conversation. But for me, what was incredibly important was calling it out. So if somebody would interrupt me when I was speaking, I would actually say, I'm sorry, I'm speaking. That's actually rude. And very quickly, they won't do it again. They won't do it again. And then they realize actually that she's earning her place around this table. She's not just going to be told what to do. And they all do it, but that I see quite a lot. They there's definitely a, I witness, particularly in management, there's a bit of a pecking order, right? So
Power
people,
play. Yeah, of
bit of
course.
a power play. And I think it's just asserting your position in that pack. And if you let people talk over you, they will talk over you. And we all do it. People, I often do it sometimes when I'm excited and I want to get my point across, and I'll suddenly realize, oh, I haven't quite let them finish. But often, and the other thing I've had a little bit is people saying the same thing as me, but if it's they're being listened to and I'm not, in a couple of different sentences, but pretty much saying the same
Oh, I
thing.
just said that.
And I'm sitting there going, why? And I've
I'm
kind of
sure
said,
that's what I just
I'll do that. I will actually say
Yes.
now in the room, and that's again how they realized, hang on a minute, we actually do need to listen. Because and the other thing I always used to do is make sure I had something to say. So, I always had an opinion. I always participated in the conversation. And sometimes that wasn't always easy. That
No,
sometimes.
and it's not like you say, if you're then the shoe's on the other foot and you're the only female that's at that dinner and you're thinking, oh no, now then none of them want to come and actually sit by me. And then you kind of feel like you've got to have it upon yourself to crack that joke to clear the air a little bit so that they
It's a
can
little
feel
bit exhausting.
comfortable.
It can be a little bit tiring. But I'm picking out negative examples
No,
generally.
of course.
My experience, they're extreme. I would say the large majority of my experience has been incredibly positive. And I think a lot of what I've experienced has been with good intent as well. As I say, people sort of say, oh, you're pregnant, you probably don't want to come for dinner tonight and all that. They're trying to make me feel okay or better. And that's also on me just to say, no, I do want to come for dinner
All
tonight.
right. Yeah. Yeah,
I
exactly. No, of course. And look, I'm not, we never want the podcast to kind of be like it's men v women. We want the equity, and that's really what it is all about. But I know there are scenarios where there might be people that are not as like confident or forthcoming as such as yourself, where they're in these environments or in these rooms, and they go, I don't really know how to tackle that. Do you think it's changing? Like I think it is changing, and I think people are learning when it comes to the gender parity and how we can address it. But have you seen a change over those like 16 years, and obviously now more recently at Trailstone?
Not as fast as I'd like to see it changing, if I'm honest with you. And I think particularly the larger organizations take a much stronger position on what's tolerated and what's not, and that's very explicit now. And I think people feel safer in speaking up in a way that they've never done before. Do I think some of those poor behaviors are still happening in pockets? Absolutely, because that's race, that's human behavior. I think you're always going to have ignorant people that will behave in the way that they behave, regardless of what company they work for. So I think it'll be more isolated versus culturally allowed, but I think it'll still, I think, your question is it better? Yes, I would imagine it's better by default, the cultural position we now have in society, but I still think there'll be,
Progressively.
yeah. Yeah.
It's just slower than we'd all hope, right? But I do think as the generations, and I'm sure you're probably seeing this with your own children, and you've got a mix of boys and girls, and it's like actually it is so they treat things so differently now, and their perspectives are so different to what it was when it was an all male working culture.
It's how they question stuff. It's the constant, well, why should we do that? And it's a really, I'm like, because I'm telling you to, and you just need to. But actually, the question is right. Why are we learning at this school? It's completely irrelevant to the rest of my life. Why do I need to? And they're asking the right questions, like that's what I'm finding about them.
Rather than just following what they've been told. Sorry, I'm kind of taking us off a little bit, but I
That's
know
all right.
that from your side, obviously as Chief People Officer, you've got a lot of experience, as you just kind of talked about there, from a diversity and inclusion perspective, and kind of rounding out what we've just talked about, what have you been able to implement throughout your career? And are there any things that we can kind of pass on to people that they can take away from this today?
Yeah, so if I talk about women only, really, first, I would say some of the most impactful stuff we did was a lot of what I would call coaching of females in very male-dominated industries and like ours, like finance, etc., particularly around those transition points. So when they've moved into a manager role or they've taken a big new job or actually they're going through a transition, about to go out on maternity leave or about to return from maternity leave. And that career coaching at that point was hugely impactful for the women that went through it. And we saw a real marked increase in women then, for example, on the return from maternity leave piece, they would then stay in the organization because they felt equipped to have the conversation on their return about what their needs were. They gave clarity around what that looked like for them and what was acceptable, and they could set boundaries around it and they felt able to manage. And call out when, those clients were saying, well, you can't take that flight because that won't work for you. Because, no, actually, I can take that flight because guess what? My childcare is set up and I'm prepared to do that. So just being able to speak up and articulate their needs, which I think having been able to develop strategies on how to do that with a coach is really helpful. And again, as you take a new promotion and you're now managing a large team, having a coach that you can bounce off of, oh, this guy does not want to work for me, how do I deal with him? And sort of getting support and, not even role playing, but again, developing strategies and being able to practice them to go and lead with authority. I think that was hugely successful. And I think creating networks of supportive females in very male-dominated environments is also very, very fruitful. You touched on it a little bit earlier. I've seen that go wrong too. I've seen what I would call the women-only whinging groups, which are, I find, counterproductive to progressive,
Agreed.
female career development. And there's a lot of them out there because people want to share their war wounds and their stories. And actually what you then find is other people attach them, like it hasn't happened to me, but I could see it could happen to me. And oh, this must be awful. And none of it actually facilitates progress. It really does. If anything, for me, it's incredibly counterproductive. So always watch out for those groups because they will way of so one, don't associate with them, but two, really try and put some seasoned female leaders into those groups to turn them
To
around.
challenge it. Yeah, exactly.
And I do think having strong role models throughout an organization that are prepared to help others, because there are a lot of senior females that don't want anything to do with this agenda because they just want to get on and do their job. They don't want to have to be singled out as a role
Don't want to
model.
be defined by it. Yeah, it's so true.
It's an extra tax, quite frankly. It's an extra tax on a senior female in their role. And that's okay, and we should respect that. But finding those that are prepared to help support others on the journey is important in the view as well. I think looking at DE&I more holistically, and this is something I debate heavily with my current CEO, is in my view, there is a place, particularly when the DEI DNA in an organization isn't particularly evolved or sophisticated, some form of, aspirational target, as it were, where we're constantly looking at what our representation looks like and, supplying the data. What have we done this quarter? Have we lost ground in terms of our diverse representation? However you choose to measure that, that's difficult in various jurisdictions. But having a constant eye on that data and holding that up works very well in this type of finance-driven industry. They love numbers. So,
Yeah, of
and you can't
course.
argue with the data, and you can cut that data very granularly now to see where we've got good areas and why are they doing well and why are we not doing well. So for me, soft targets, looking at representation ongoing bay, looking at data is super valuable with respect to the diversity agenda. But you can look at that all you like, and you can try to increase, representation through hiring, retention, and promotion. But the reality of all of that is it's a constant revolving door unless you're addressing the culture of the
If
organization.
you exactly that,
So for
and if
me,
you do all of these things up front, but you're doing nothing once they've joined, you expect
And
them
they're
to
not going to get
stay?
promoted. It's just so that cultural piece, in my view, actually has to come first, and that's harder for people. It's less tangible. I think that's a bit of an excuse. I think you can measure culture, and I think
I
you can
agree.
do a lot to impact culture, but there has to be buy-in. So that's where, I take you back to some of those biggest achievements is when you get those senior leaders to have an aha moment, then you get their buy-in, and then you have the wind right behind you in terms of progressing that agenda. And the most powerful ways I've been able to do that is one, here's what's happening here. Have you ever been asked for your security boss when you've come in the building? No. Well, guess what? Our Asian colleagues get it pretty much 3 times a month, and you've worked here for 20 years and you've never been
Never
asked.
had it.
I have an example of a one of our female senior female bankers who was black was asked to get the coffee in the conference room. It was assumed she was staff because she had a white shirt and a black skirt on. So when you start to let people around your table saying we don't have issues here realize what's happening in their very building, they start to listen a bit more. They start to bit more, and that's when you can address some of the cultural pieces. And the way you do that is through accountability. Those senior leadership have to hold their managers and their leaders accountable for creating that tone and that culture in those organizations. But our role is as sort of DE&I leaders, if that's the position you're in, is helping them understand why they
Yeah,
do
so
that.
true. Sure, I haven't even thought about unpicking it in that way. And actually, sometimes if you hold up the mirror and you kind of just say, let's actually have a look here at the culture. And then you, like, say you've had made headways in your hiring and your stats are up and the data is there. But like you say, actually, if you haven't done the work at the beginning, people are not going to stay because they'd see straight through it. So it's actually kind of saying, here's the mirror.
And the culture bit for people is hard to get for them because their day-to-day is probably fine because guess what? They're surrounded by people
Not
that look like
impacted.
them, that they think everything's nice. But I'm not sexist, I'm not a racist. I treat everybody the same. Well, you know what? That's not good enough because not everybody is being treated
It's the same.
the same. And you're in a position of leadership and have the ability to change that. So, that is your responsibility. But helping them understand the problem, I think, is sort of key. And even here, I had an example. I speak quite closely to one of my management team, and I'm the only female on the management team here at Trailstone as well. And Sometimes it's just tiresome sometimes being the only woman, and not because they're sexist and not because they don't make me feel welcome, or it's just tiresome, not to have another
So
woman.
just don't think in the same way.
It's just
Yeah.
different. It's just an extra effort. It's an extra tax to,
Yeah.
and I'm sure they'd probably be a bit offended by that actually. And it's certainly not meant because I think they're not great people. It's just nice to have a female network.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm going
We
to be
do
working.
think differently, that's the thing. And we will look at things differently. And that's why it pays to have diverse teams, not just gender, obviously across every possible facet that we can think of from a diversity perspective. But I think that sometimes that's what is forgotten because it's so ingrained in, like you just said, like what actually is, well, it doesn't impact me because I like it and I'm used to my culture and this is like I'm in my bubble kind of thing. It's like, okay, let's step back from that a little bit and actually see what everyone else is feeling. But
That's
yeah,
it.
it's,
That's it. It's that.
yeah.
Oh, hang on a minute.
And you have to be brave enough to be able to hold up that mirror, I think, as well to people.
You do, but it doesn't actually take a lot. It's if you can make the first step, yes, but then there's genuine interest because people, I think, deep down are the majority of them are good people.
Yeah.
So that's what I was saying to you. That post, the guy that called me said, I don't need to do anything, do I, Caroline? This is all US. When he got it, like he was moving heaven and earth because he was like, I had
Amazing.
no idea. So I think it's yes, that first step, but
Yeah.
once you do that, and you can only do that, by the way, if you're in touch with your people as a people leader, as an HR
Yeah.
professional. If you're actually not in touch with your people, they're not going to be talking to you
They're
anyway.
not going to think about
You're
it.
not going
Yeah.
to know. So you're not going to be that useful. So how
Yeah.
you develop and bring people to talk to you, I think is
Okay.
key.
Yeah, for sure. This is the million-dollar question that everybody asks me when they're talking about becoming a female leader and going down the getting to a C level exec, basically. How do you balance work and life? And it sounds as though you've had your hands full. So would love to know how you have done it.
I'm not sure I do. Does anyone? I don't know. I'm not sure I totally do. I think I put a lot of pressure on myself. But I've got a lot of energy, so I'm kind of lucky on that respect. But I've made my peace a long time ago, and this would be, I guess, a word of advice to others is you just can't do it all. You can't. So, make your peace with that. You can't have it all. It's an illusion, sadly. In my view, I've never been able to have it all. There's things, time, I'm so ridiculously time poor. But the good thing is I get energy from my life, which and I enjoy it, right? So
Yeah.
I enjoy my job and I enjoy the busyness with my kids,
Yeah.
and all of that gives me energy in a weird way until I collapse and I'm utterly exhausted. But I would say I made my peace a long time ago with not being able
Yeah.
to have it all, but what I do is get quite diagnostic on what I'm not going to miss, right? So
What's what? Well, that's it.
the kids and I sort of sit down and okay, my 11-year-old's about to finish primary school, and I'm like, right, what's important to you? I really want you to be at my last sports day, and I want you to be at my summer concert because that'll be my last one. Or, they
Right.
do a leaders assembly. It's dead important to him that mum is at that because there's a massive water fight in the park afterwards, and I've got to buy the sweets, right? So I've got
Sounds
to.
fun.
And I have to be there for that. That can't be anyone else. That's got to be mum. Done.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Next child. What's important? Well, I don't really care about prize giving. It's rubbish. We have to sit there for 6 hours. Don't really care if you're there or not, mum. But you know what? I'm in a play. I really need you to be there. So just having that ongoing,
Yeah.
what's okay to miss and what's not, allows me to manage. Okay, I'm fine this week. I can work late. I can go to Berlin. I can be in Texas. I
Yeah.
can do whatever I need to do work-wise and not feel guilty about it because I've okayed it. We've had that conversation. I know
Yeah.
there's nothing in the diary. But the really important stuff I'm there for, the first days and the picking up and and that just takes a bit of planning. But no, you will miss stuff. End of story, is what I would say. But the other thing I would say that I've learned to do is be clear on my boundaries, and that took me a long time. That took me, oh, I can't say no to that, and I'm gonna have to do it because, oh, I don't want to let anyone down. Now I'm okay to ask the question of when does that need to be done by? I can't deliver that by then, but you can have it by then. And I can just be clear on managing the boundaries of what I will and won't do for who by when. And as long as you're clear with people and are managing those expectations, that's generally worked pretty well for me, actually.
It's actually really helpful advice. It's interesting. So I was on one of the earlier podcasts I did with a different chief people officer. She was like, look, the only way that you can have it all is if you know what it all is for you. And essentially
I think that's
it's
brilliant
you.
advice.
You choose what works for you and your family and how that aligns. And you go, do you know what? I have got it all. I haven't because I'm not doing X, Y, or Z, but this is what fits in for us, and this is how I can feel like I'm still achieving.
I
Which I
love
thought
that.
was a re
I love that. I absolutely love that. I think that's great advice. And then my last bit, which is what I was saying, a little bit of, that falling asleep exhausted piece is what is it you need to fill you up a little bit as well? Because you can give to work and you can give to the family. For me, it's my exercise. I have to do some form of exercise, otherwise my mental health suffers. My mood, and everybody is grateful when mum does some exercise, let's just put it that way. Like work,
That's good.
like, oh, been to the gym, so I just
You
need
want
to come back nicer. So what is it that you need to keep you going,
That's so
really?
true.
Well, so it's that, but I like that. What does it all look like for you? I think defining that is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, well, it's probably similar to what you just said there in terms of how do you fill up your own cup. And it also means you have to fill up your cup with the family too, right? It can't just be your cup, which I agree with. You just shared a few bits of advice there. So I don't want to kind of necessarily say, is there any other advice? Because you might have just shared it. But is there any other earlier advice that you wish you'd have received?
Earlier advice, probably trust my gut more. I think, I think imposter syndrome is a real thing. Acknowledge it for what it is and know you can do it. Just keep going. And if you think something is right and you're that trust your gut thing. Like often I've gone, oh, this is not, I haven't necessarily believed in the direction something's moving in. I can sort of see all these obstacles there. But the imposter syndrome is going, yeah, but all these people know what they're doing in the room, and they're the experts and it's not really you. And I haven't, so that trust your gut and questioning and actually really speaking up, I think really accelerated my career. That having the opinion piece. And going, hang on a minute, really? And saying probably what most people in the room are thinking, but not really saying it because you might be in an environment where it's quite hierarchical or whatever. That sort of challenge and speaking up bit that comes from the gut, it comes from the gut that listen to it. And I wish I'd started doing that earlier. I think it's something that I've developed, but I think that's really powerful. And I think that. Knock the monkey off the shoulder and acknowledge, yeah, this is imposter syndrome. Chances are I've actually got this. Because every job I've ever gone into, I've gone, I can't do this. I can't. This is just beyond me. And you know what? It's not.
Yeah,
None of
exactly.
us, we're not rocket scientists, I'm an HR professional and
Yeah.
a lot of it is on intuition, gut and dealing with people. We can do
Yeah.
it, so trust it and sort of speak up as probably I wish I'd honed that and developed that.
Yeah. Comes from confidence though, doesn't it? I think it's one that you can't, it's a hard skill to master until you're like fully confident. You're like, yeah, okay, I trust that I can go with that. What about for the future generations of female leaders, thinking about your two daughters, what advice do you have for them?
Keep pushing, keep pushing. I don't think it's gonna. I don't think our world is gonna change materially. I think unfortunately, as with the DEI agenda, as we've seen, sort of it's kind of cyclical in line with, I think, economy booms and busts, as it were. And I think we're in a slightly more difficult period at the moment, and I feel the agenda has taken a back seat again. You know, there will be a time where it'll be thrown into the limelight again, but we're not there yet, and I think progress is really slowing. You know, there was all so much talk about gender pay gap and all these differences,
Everything,
and
yeah.
you know, it just doesn't feel as prevalent anymore at all. So sadly, I feel progress will slow down again. So keep pushing and be your true authentic selves, you know, believe in yourselves, and you know, keep pushing is what I would say, and keep speaking up, and yeah, be you, don't change to, and keep questioning, which is what I see in them now, which I absolutely question the status quo currently. And you know, just as I say, you deserve to be there. So and also I feel like we have a responsibility. If you earn a seat at a leadership table, or you progress further in a very male-dominated, you know, we have a duty to make our presence known, and you know, and to me it's like, have something to say for yourself. If you've got the seat, if you fought for the seat, you're there, make it worthwhile, you know, for yourself more than anything.
Yeah. Caroline, thank you so much. I think your daughters are very lucky, and your sons too, but you know, it's great to have a mum when you're a female who's kind of pushing you to do more, as I think it's important. And likewise, we can do the same for our sons, right? It's hopefully we can help shape the more curious of people who are kind of questioning why we've always done things as we move through the generations, which I do think, like you say, we are doing more of that. So thank you so much for sharing and for all the insights. I think everybody will be really pleased with the takeaways that they've learned from you today.
It's been a really enjoyable conversation. Thank
Yeah,
you.
really enjoyed it. One last question, because it's the
Yeah.
Tea with Tea podcast, which is, how do you take your tea?
Oh, I'm a coffee drinker through and through. I probably have about 12 cups of coffee a day. But
Oh
if I didn't have tea, it would be a black Earl Grey first thing in the morning. If I
my gosh.
did, or a peppermint tea. I like a peppermint tea with my Maltesers before bed at night. So that would be, but mainly coffee.
Yeah, fair enough. I have gone off coffee during this pregnancy, but I think hopefully it will come back.
It'll come
I'm
back.
sure
I
it will
promise
come
you. I
back.
was off coffee for all four of mine. It comes back pretty quick on those sleepless nights, I tell you.
Yeah, very true. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us.
Pleasure.
And let's meet soon.